Hello, I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Darren Harriott, Sophie Willen, Jake Yap and Gemma Arrowsmith. And this is...
The Noel Show!
Thank you very much indeed. So, a controversial transfer of power in Zimbabwe this week. Robert Mugabe finally lost his grip on the leadership when he just couldn't find the money for a deal with the DUP. It's the end of an era. Mugabe's been in charge for 37 years since Zimbabwe's independence from the UK, so maybe he might travel to Britain. Admittedly, he is 93 years old and in failing health.
But the Department for Work and Pensions have already declared him fit for work and suggested Tesco. It's a terrible blow to his wife, Grace, who'd been lined up to take over, making Zimbabwe far closer to having a female leader than the Labour Party has ever been.
It's slightly weird watching a military coup happening live on your TV.
Although we were assured it wasn't a military coup by a man in military uniform who'd taken over a TV studio. This week, the Prime Minister openly accused Russia of interfering in various recent polls, using a speech at the Guildhall to say directly to Vladimir Putin,
"We know what you're doing."
Words that she would also love to say to David Davis, but would be entirely untrue in his case. We have no idea what he's doing. It's not quite clear why she wanted to antagonise Vladimir Putin at the moment, though.
"I am shortly sending my foreign secretary to visit Moscow."
Well, perhaps it is. The interesting thing is that if you read the reports of her speech and replace the word
Russia
with the word
Boris,
it still makes absolute sense.
"I have a very simple message for
Boris.
We know what you're doing, and you will not succeed."
To complicate things, Russia themselves face a presidential election in March next year, and President Putin hasn't confirmed whether or not he will seek re-election.
Well, you couldn't blame him if he didn't run again. It must be exhausting being in charge of two superpowers at once.
It's a bit hypocritical of us, though, to criticise Russia, because Russia is actually rather similar to us in that it's a place that has found it very difficult to adjust to its diminished stature in the world. I mean, if you think about it...
Russia is now one country amongst the many that used to make up the Soviet Union, and they don't like it.
We're one of the many countries that make up the European Union, and we don't like it.
Russia uses armies of teenagers to demonstrate the potential uses of computers.
We have Curry's PC World.
Russia has a vast amount of wealth concentrated in the hands of a few who then take their wealth out of the country.
I rest my case on the counter of a bank in Jersey. So, we shouldn't treat Russia like some alien state. They are a faded power determined to reassert themselves exactly like us. Although, obviously, there are substantial differences too. Russians, for example, can afford property in London. But all the same, the timing of the Prime Minister's front page attack on Mr. Putin just as the Brexit bill goes back to Parliament does seem a bit suspicious. As a speech, it's basically this.
"Lord Mayor, honoured guests, my lords, ladies and gentlemen. Look, a lion!"
The big I'm a celebrity, get me out of here news, of course, is that Boris's father, Stanley Johnson, is in the jungle this year, while Boris himself will front the spin-off show I'm a British Citizen, Get Me Out of Here. We don't know what the Foreign Secretary makes of his father's participation or whether he's even aware of it.
I have no idea what my father is doing in Australia. I believe he is training journalists.
The whole subject of the Brexit process is, of course, still hugely divisive, with any kind of scrutiny of any detail of the timetable liable to have the Daily Telegraph label you as a mutineer. So we will stick carefully to the current guidelines on political balance and ensure that both sides of the argument are always given when it comes to the
liberation of the country from the shackles of Brussels.
Hugely risky process of Brexit as we prepare to
follow the will of the people.
Placate grumpy pensioners. As the negotiations continue, we must make clear that we don't
owe a penny.
Have a clue what we're doing. And that Theresa May did the right thing when she boldly triggered Article 50 without
fear or hesitation.
Any idea what to do next. As we move forward, the country is
together as never before.
Split completely down the middle, while the government is determined to get
the best deal for Britain
through the next 6 months without an election. They've actually been fairly successful so far in their overall strategy, which is, of course, to get everything nailed down before the public realise how complicated it's going to be. And the key thing is to get the repeal bill through Parliament before anything bad happens, which MPs have made trickier by tabling more than 470 amendments to its 186
pages. 186
pages.
It's basically the Argos catalogue of Brexit. MPs will stay up late circling which amendments they want for Christmas.
Now, some of the amendments are relatively minor. For such a vast long-term change to our economic structures, there's a bizarre focus on the exact time of day that we leave. Amendment 114, for example, suggests that
at 11 p.m. on the 29th of March 2019, the speaking clock shall be required by statute to go
at the third stroke, the time will be Brexit. Precisely.
While Amendment 342 requires that
it shall be a legal requirement that our departure from the European Union should be marked by the simultaneous broadcast of a programme to be entitled Jules Holland's Brexit-nanny.
So, 5 seconds to go, you lovely people. Four, three, two, one. That's it. Everyone we booked under world music, please leave the country.
Amendment 96 suggests that the day be designated as a bank holiday, after which the banks will reopen, but in Frankfurt or Dublin.
The most controversial amendment is the one requiring the exact time of departure to be set in law, which does seem a rather strange thing to do. It seems a bit odd to commit to leaving at a specified time when you're not sure where you're going yet. That wouldn't really work anywhere else.
The train on platform 3 is at 10:59 to... Well, we're not exactly sure. But it will be calling at, well, various places. The good news, though, is it's leaving at exactly that time. And it has a buffet car with a selection of newly unregulated snacks, including steak and hormone pasties and chlorinated chicken tikka. We have hot drinks with no law on how hot, and warn you that some of our products contain nuts. We no longer have to tell you which. So just guess. If you have any questions about your journey today, David Davis will be passing through the train and will be happy to avoid answering them. Thank you.
And now, dropping in before she goes on a nationwide tour in the spring and ahead of her own Radio 4 show, would you please welcome Sophie Willan.
I went up to Edinburgh Festival last year and it went quite well. They got very excited, the industry. They were running around going, quick, we've got a working class one. No, a real one. I know, quick, Sophie, grab your clogs and your whippet, let's go. I can't believe it's still a thing to be northern, but it is. You love us, don't you? You love us. There's loads of us down here, but you still consider us a very exotic fruit. Don't you? We're actually taking over. You're worried about the Muslims. It's us with the plan. Just every day they go, I love Northerners. I love Northerners. You're so friendly. We're not friendly. We're just nosy. They say, I love the North. I love the North. Yet you never come to visit, do you? You will do now, though, because I don't know if you've heard. We've just been rebranded the Northern Powerhouse. I know. It's very exciting. It basically means in a couple of years, there'll be somebody in Bradford paying £800 a month for a cupboard and they won't know why. Yeah, they get quite disappointed, like Southerners, you know, because they think that we're all trapped in a Mike Lee film. And I don't tell them that everybody in Bolton is now eating hummus and they know how to spell it. I know, and we watch the news. We even read it. I've read the news this week. And I know that next week we've got the big budget coming out. Very exciting, isn't it? Jeremy Corbyn was on today and he was saying how austerity has affected all the public services. Now, I didn't actually know what austerity meant for years. I actually thought it was a perfume. Austerity by DKNY, smell of disillusionment and poverty. But it's all like this now, isn't it? It's all cuts, cuts, cuts. I think if I was in that meeting, I would like to ask Theresa about the things they don't cut. Like the bar in the House of Commons is still partly subsidised. It's actually cheaper than a Wetherspoons. I know, I've tried to go. Now, I get drunk. I think you might be tonight, mightn't you, love? And when we we get drunk, we say and do a lot of stupid things, don't we? But it doesn't become a law, does it? I once insisted that if a kebab takes longer than 10 minutes to make, I have the right to dance on the counter. That was never legitimised. And I have woken up next to some very questionable people, but never the DUP. My mum's on benefits. Right? She's not been very good at jobs. Or life, really. Or motherhood. She was a terrible mother. She once tried to boil me an egg. She stood stirring at the pan for 20 minutes. It was so stressful. She just stood there going, "How do you know if it's cooked? It looks the same!" Which, to be fair, it does. She's now stored under my phone as Mum, not an emergency contact. So she's not good at life. And luckily, she doesn't have to go to work. They signed her off. But could you imagine if she did? I mean, she looks like Iggy Pop does now. If Iggy Pop could only shop on Bury Market. Yeah, luckily, my mum doesn't have to go to work. But unfortunately, that means she has to put up with the slow torture of daytime telly. Awful, isn't it? And the adverts on daytime telly are so depressing, aren't they? They're all charity adverts. There's this one now, Donkey Aid. Have you seen it? It starts in black and white. This very sad music comes on via violin. Oh, and this very depressed-looking donkey walks onto shop. And I have to say, he's a fantastic actor. Anyway, my mum saw that advert and she fell in love with Wilfred the donkey. Wilfred, I've got to have him, Wilfred! I think it tapped into a guilt, you know, for not having a job and abandoning me. I think she saw Wilfred and thought, well, I was crap with a human, but a donkey I could do. She loved him. She started sponsoring him. She's skint now. I called her up recently. I said, do you want to go out for a drink? She said, I can't. I've got to put Wilfred through university. So what I'd like to come out of the budget, what I'd really like, is for them to go, right, we're going to cut the subsidy for the House of Commons bar, at least so it's as expensive as a Yates is. And we're going to make sure that people on welfare, like my mum, don't have to explain why Iggy Pop is not fit for work. That's been me. You've been great. Thank you very much.
Now, President Trump has cheered everyone up by saying it might be a good thing for the world if he and Kim Jong-un could be friends. Is this the beginning of a burgeoning new global presidential rat pack? Here to find out, please welcome Jake Yap.
Let me start by saying I'm a huge fan of North Korea, okay? Not generally, but some Japanese girls are smoking hot. So hot, the girl, so hot. And speaking of which, here's a little hot tea. Mr. Kim Jong-un, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, bada boom, bada bing.
That's right. So, should we do this, Kim? I just flew in from the USA. And when it comes to Kim, I gotta say, we could be friends. Could you believe it? It could happen. We're two peas in a pod.
Shut your mouth, you senile fool. You're too old, daddy-o. And you're not cool.
You're short and fat.
Oh, you'll regret that.
We're two peas in a pod.
The haters gonna hate.
Dictators gonna dictate. Everybody know America sucks.
What? It's like North Korea, but with Starbucks.
Your diplomacy is passable if you'll stop checking out my arsenal.
I like to take it out sometime.
Oh, you're cruising, broom, bruising.
We're two peas in a pod. That hair, so rare. We're such a special pair.
The only thing that gets me really pissed is when someone calls me a narcissist. So what do you say, little rocket man?
I'm here for you when the twit hits the fan.
Friends?
You better believe it.
Let's call Vlad.
Table for three.
We're two peas in a hell's freezing up. Nuclear, ridiculous peas in a pod.
I honestly think this is the greatest song ever written. Believe me, folks.
And now, having taken the Edinburgh Festival by storm and fresh from Radio 4's Best of the Fest, would you please welcome Darren Harriott?
I'm Darren. I'm not from as far north as Sophie. From Birmingham. Yep. Yep. No one really cares about Birmingham. It's true. It's like the second city, but no one really cares. Like, my favourite TV show is Game of Thrones, and there's no Brummies in it. It makes no sense. They act like when the North fights the South, they don't have to go through Birmingham to get there. I'm glad to be here, though, guys. It's Movember. Tis the season of sinister facial hair. For the next few weeks, men across the nation will try their hardest to look like they belong on some sort of register. I thought Movember was all about raising awareness for testicular cancer, you know, as men don't like to talk about it. But nowadays, it's all about testicular cancer, prostate cancer, high mortality rates amongst men because of mental health issues and their well-being. I mean, it's a good thing, but it definitely proves how uncomfortable men are with talking about testicular cancer. They're like, oh, can we talk about suicide instead? That's exactly what I'll do. I should start off, I'll tell you about my family. My dad was a drug dealer, a drug addict, in and out of prison for multiple crimes, and had serious mental health issues like depression and bouts of schizophrenia. My mum, on the other hand, enjoys a glass of wine after work, TV soaps, and complicated men. I come from a long line of drug dealers. My dad was a drug dealer, my brother was a drug dealer, my cousin was a drug dealer, my half-brother was a drug dealer, and then you've got me, comedian. Yeah, and still my mum's like, when are you going to get a real job? So many drug dealers in my family. My family tree is a cannabis plant. My dad was a drug dealer who had mental health issues that weren't addressed because of the drug dealing. As at the time, it seemed like the bigger problem. He suffered from really bad depression, which I guess is fine in the drug dealing world. It's not really a customer service-based profession, is it? You know, as long as you get what you want, you don't really care about the supplier's attitude. If you're the sort of person to buy drugs off the street, you're hardly going to go back to your mates and go, yeah, I got the weed, but he could have at least smiled. Every week, there is a new article or story about mental health. Just this week, actor Ralph Little took to Twitter and corrected Jeremy Hunt about the number of mental health workers employed by the NHS. And when you're being owned by that lanky dude from 2 pints of lager and a packet of crisps, it's time to ask yourself some serious questions like, where did I put my calculator? I read the other day that adult colouring books can help you deal with stress and anxiety. I travel on public transport to get around. I couldn't imagine anything more stressful than trying to colour in inside the lines on a moving bus. Know what's in these adult colouring books. You'd imagine it's more grown up than Mickey Mouse. Like it's Mickey Mouse struggling to get a mortgage and Minnie has left him and taken the kids. I've also seen little tips, things like walking with your head held high. That can have a positive impact on your mental well-being. Not too high. Full frontal nostril is never a good thing. You know, too high and you start to look a bit snooty. Even higher than that, and you just look like you're suspicious of everyone. It's how I imagine conspiracy theorists look when they go to the supermarket, or watch 9/11 videos on YouTube, or how Theresa May looks when she searches Brexit on Twitter. My dad died when I was 11. He committed suicide. He hung himself in a prison cell. And I deal with it in various ways. I was just a child when my dad died, an innocent kid. The way I tell you how innocent I was when my dad died, just to let you know, my favourite rapper in the entire world back then was Will Smith. Yeah, because he didn't swear, and like me, we both enjoyed the summertime. Two things that have plagued a lot of the men in my family, drugs and mental health. In particular, hearing voices. My dad at one point was hearing voices, my brother was hearing voices, and my cousin too. I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I hear voices, because I do comedy. So I talk to myself a lot every day. So I have no idea if I'm hearing voices or it's just like material. Hey, Darren, set fire to this building. Oh, needs a better punchline. One thing I've learned about people who hear voices is the voices are always bad, innit? Like, they never offer, like, friendly advice. It's never like, oh, try less sugar in your tea. Do yoga. I'm going to start therapy. I definitely need therapy. One thing I know is I need a female therapist. Because at times I'm quite laddie. And I think with a male therapist, I try and act up. You know, try and act like the alpha male. And that's not going to be great for therapy. Hey, Darren, what's on your mind? Nando's and pussy. My problem has always been self-loathing, self-hatred and blame. Yep, that's when people normally give me sympathy, but whatever. I am trying to, like, love myself more. The goal is to one day love myself the way women do in shampoo commercials. You ever seen how they walk out the bathroom happy with a zest for life? It can't just be because their hair's all moist and shiny and dandruff-free. I mean, Joe Hart's never looked that happy. But that's my goal. A little bit more self-love in my life. Teenage me would have said, come on, Darren. You do plenty of self-love. Upstairs, in your room, with your laptop. Yeah, but I mean the kind that doesn't fill me with shame afterwards. What a way to end.
So, Delia Smith said this week that too many restaurants try to be, quote, theatre on a plate, and that cooking in this country has become very poncy, very chefy.
Well, what does she mean? Here to tell us is one of Britain's foremost food writers, restaurateur, food critic and presenter, William Sitwell.
Hi there.
So, William, what does she mean? And is she right, Delia?
Well, there are a lot of poncy restaurants in Norwich. And I think that that's where maybe she's having lunch and dinner.
But I tend to think she's wrong, you see.
No, these days we have a greater variety of restaurants than any city on the planet. You can't get Indian, Taiwanese, Korean. You can't eat kimchi in Paris. You know, we have better food than New York, for example. So, London has the greatest variety of restaurants on the planet.
And is it a national thing? I mean, is it only London where you eat well, or is it nationwide?
Yeah, it's mainly London. You can get a good Balti in Birmingham. And there is a man called Tom Kitchen who cooks in Edinburgh. But that's about it.
Where? Okay.
The address is now show at bbc.co.uk.
Yeah. So where would you say, then, if there was an international culinary league, where are we? What I'm basically asking is, are we higher than the French?
Yes, and we're very self-effacing about it. We're just honest, and we admit it. And, you see, the French haven't developed over the years.
This is just in cooking we're talking about. Yeah.
We're leagues above the French.
But is the fact that we are good at food... I mean, it isn't down to traditional British cooking, is it? Is it down to the fact that we're just very good at nicking ideas from everywhere else?
Well, no, we're a very open country.
That's one way of putting it. So are we?
We welcome people. We welcome their food, and then we serve it back at them.
And do you get, because you presumably eat out a lot, don't you? Do you get fed up? Do you some nights do you just want to curl up with a pot noodle in front of Hollyoaks? Are you always happy?
I get fed up from restaurants where waiters come out and they point at the food and their fingers get closer and closer and they point out that there is a little piece of baby coriander there and they point out the fact that there are microherbs and they talk about the fact that there's soil. I get annoyed in a restaurant if I've gone to the loo and I've come back and someone has refolded my napkin.
Oh, that's so annoying, isn't it?
It's very annoying.
I guess
I'm with him. I am absolutely with him. What is a microherb?
It's a very, very small herb.
Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed, William Sitwell.
Thank you.
And Staying with the food theme piece, welcome back, Jake Yap.
Greggs were in the headlines this week with the release of their advent calendar, which on the 24th features, in a masterstroke of religious sensitivity, not Jesus, but a sausage roll. I thought I'd do a Christmassy song about this. I apologise, I know it's early to be doing that, but they started it. It also involved quite extensive research into the Greggs menu, which is a real eye-opener to a vegan. On the first day of Christmas, my true love sent to me a cheese and onion pasty. On the second day of Greggsmas, my true love sent to me two tuna toasties and a cheese and onion pasty. We'll skip a day. On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me something ha la 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 la. Three steak bakes, two aspirins, just to be on the safe side, and a cheese and onion pasty. On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me a highly inappropriate substitution of our Lord and Saviour Jesus Christ with a sausage roll. Let's press on. On the 12th day of Christmas, why not? My true love sent to me 12 column inches, 11 branches closing, 10 shares are diving, 9 diets failing, 8 something dodgy, 7 sausage and bean melts. People live like this. 6 vegans weeping. A highly inappropriate substitution of our Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ, the King of the Jews, with a pork sausage roll! Something ha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. 3 Alka-Seltzers, 2 Pepto-Bismol, and an angioplasty.
That's all we have time for, and goodbye!
Goodbye!
You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punce, Hugh Dennis, Darren Harriott, Sophie Willan, Jake Yap, Gemma Arrowsmith and William Sitwell. It was written by the cast with additional material from Robin Morgan, Jane Lammercraft, Laura Major and Athena Kuglenu. The producer was Victoria Lloyd. It was a BBC Studios production.